What a time of year this is in the sports world. March Madness is starting. The NBA season's coming to a close, meaning the NBA playoff races are heating up. And, of course, baseball season is just a few short weeks away. Welcome to TYS 20. We've been doing our Major League Baseball divisional previews the last 4 weeks, but on today's show, we're going to talk about college basketball and then talk about the Pacers later on. And next week, we'll get back to our divisional previews in baseball. First things first, March Madness. Such an exciting tournament every single year, and every year, the question gets asked, should there be such thing as automatic bids for this tournament? Meaning, should weaker teams make the tournament just by winning their conference tournament? There's obviously a lot of opinions about this. My opinion is, if you win your conference tournament, you deserve the right to play in the NCAA tournament. Some people would argue that the NCAA should simply pick the best 64 teams and get rid of automatic bids. I can see their side of things, but to me, that would be less exciting. One of the reasons everybody loves March Madness is because of the upsets and because of seeing teams that nobody has really ever heard of knocking off a top seed that everybody has heard of. And I just think you wouldn't have near as much of that if there were no automatic bids. I had the wonderful privilege of playing college basketball at a D3 school, Lincoln Christian University, and there was always a team that was the best team in our region. They were always the number one seed. And our tournament was set up in such a way that also had automatic bids. It gave us something to play for. You know, if we didn't have a very good season, we still had this hope of playing our best basketball by the end of the year to give ourselves a chance at playing in the national tournament. And I think you really need that in sports, especially in college. And, you know, for all of those teams that play in real good conferences in the NCAA, my opinion is if you can't win more than half of your games in conference, even though you're in a tough conference, I just don't think that team deserves the right to play in the conference, or excuse me, in the NCAA tournament ahead of a team that wins their tournament in their conference. That's just how I feel about things. There's also talk about expanding the tournament, and I'm kind of worried about this idea. If they end up doing something like 68 teams, I'd be okay with it. But something like 94 teams or something crazy like that, I'm definitely not for it. This is one of the great tournaments, one of the great postseason setups in the history of sports. I know they'll make more money if they expand, but please don't fix something that's not broke. As for the bracket itself, I'm not going to give away too much on this week's show about who I'm picking because, of course, like many of you, I'm in a bracket challenge. Maybe next week when all the picks are locked in, I will reveal my overall picks. But for this week, I'm just going to highlight the games that the Big Ten are involved in. First off, I don't think Ohio State or Purdue are going to have any problems in their first round matchups, and I think they'll both be playing on the second weekend of the tournament. The other games, however, are pretty intriguing. Wisconsin should take care of business against Belmont, but assuming they play Kansas State in the second round, that's going to be one heck of a second round matchup. Guards Jordan Taylor for Wisconsin and Jacob Pullen for KSU. That's going to be a fun one to watch. Illinois sneaked into the tournament. Not sure I agree with it. They had 13 losses, several bad losses, and only one win against a ranked opponent. Their first round matchup is a toss-up as they play UNLV. Both of these teams have good defense but lack toughness down low. They were both 1-6 against the top 25 this year. Intriguing matchup. I'm going to pick UNLV. How about this one? Michigan State and UCLA, two perennial Final Four teams going head-to-head in the first round. UCLA probably looks a little bit better on paper, but I'm never betting against a Tom Izzo team in March, especially in the first round. I've got the Spartans with at least one win in the tournament. I'm glad Penn State made the tournament. They are a 10 seed, and they take on Temple in the first round. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Nittany Lions, mainly because of all of their seniors that they have, and they played well in the Big Ten tournament, so I'm going to roll with them. And lastly, Michigan is back in the big dance for just the second time since 1998. They play Tennessee. The Volunteers had four huge wins this season, but also some pretty pathetic losses. And both these teams are pretty tough to judge. I'm going to give the slight edge to Tennessee. Hopefully the Big Ten represents well this year. Though my Hoosiers had a very disappointing finish to the season, I still predict that they will be dancing in the tournament next season. We'll have to see. We'll have more coverage about March Madness and the bracket, of course, in coming podcasts. Good luck as you make your picks. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Indiana Pacers. Exciting stuff coming up. Stay with us.
You know, I know college basketball. And my bracket this year? Are you kidding me? Unstoppable. I like that team this year. I like that team that won it all a year or two ago, or maybe three. Was it three? It could be 3 years ago. I like that team. You know why? Because they got spirit. And they got this great coach, man. He just gets in there and he just coaches. And there's that kid in the other conference. Watch out for him. A sophomore guard, center, pro basketball. I mean, he doesn't dunk the ball. He's not a fancy guy. Doesn't do the through-the-legs pass and all that stuff. But he gets W's.
All right, it's time to talk a little Indiana Pacers. And we welcome in, once again, our Pacer insider, Chris Goff. And since we've last talked on the show, the Pacers have fired Jim O'Brien. They went 9-3 under Vogel to start. Then I think the fans overreacted a little bit, as they often do when a team does well initially under a new coach. Since then, it's been a little difficult to watch. Not much defense, people playing for themselves, very little energy, losing to some of the worst teams in the NBA. So, Chris, my first question to you is, what has been going on with this team? We feel a little bit better with the win over the Knicks. But what has gone on with this team, and who do you think deserves the blame for this?
Well, Tyler, first of all, it's good to be back on the show, and it's certainly better to talk to you after yesterday's win over the Knicks. It takes a little bit of a stench away from this streak that we've been on, losing 10 out of 13 games since we won in Milwaukee. But there's a lot of blame to go around. Certainly in the locker room, certainly with the coaching staff, and certainly with the front office, which, you know, I'll start with the front office, Larry Bird and David Morway. They had significant expiring contracts with Mike Dunleavy, TJ Ford, Jeff Foster, and they weren't able to turn those contracts into any assets for the future or for this year. Now, I understand that there were extenuating circumstances with the O.J. Mayo trade. But in the long run, if we can't lure a significant free agent here, not acquiring somebody at the trade deadline will have set this team back in the long term. For the players that are on the court now, there wasn't a lot of energy during that streak. There certainly wasn't a commitment to defense. I think Frank Vogel, when he took over, certainly, and I said this, the offense was terrible. It was bad. It needed to be improved. But they practiced on offense. They focused on offense. And by Vogel's own admission, that led to a weaker defensive effort, and the players evidently didn't feel that they had to put forth the same energy on that end of the floor, and it really hurt the Pacers. You know, teams were scoring 60 points in the first half at will. You know, that just can't happen. It's not easy to win consistently that way. On offense, I feel like guys went after their own shot, and that was really upsetting because I feel like this is a good character team. I feel like the guys want to win. They want to be unified. But when I see Dante Jones and A.J. Price and Danny Granger and even Roy Hibbert sometimes, Darren Collison, just looking to shoot when they get the basketball and not moving it, that's upsetting. And it's certainly not an adherence to the concepts that were taught to them in training camp by Jim O'Brien, which is ball movement, movement of people, and movement of the basketball. And then as far as Frank Vogel and the coaching staff, you know, Vogel's a blank slate. We really don't have any track record to evaluate him. He's never had to lead a locker room of men on his own without Jim O'Brien. And so with Vogel, it's easy to say we saw the same problems occurring over and over. You've got to think that the coach hasn't been able to, A, either diagnose what the problems are or, B, correct those problems. And C, you know, deal with the chemistry issues that were on the team, just a general lack of leadership. So there's a lot of problems and a lot of blame. At the end of the day, this team might make the playoffs, but there are still going to be significant issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the blame is a combination of things. I don't think Frank Vogel is a head coach in this league, though that's to be determined, I guess. I don't put it all on Granger, but I do put some of it. He's not playing well. And as you mentioned, the team just stopped playing defense. It's a collective effort there. And, you know, this team over the years seems to lose confidence quicker than a teenage girl who didn't get asked to the dance. I mean, it's like they lose a few games, and as a fan, I'm thinking, uh-oh, here comes a long slump. You know, I've got some numbers to back it up. The Pacers started the season 9-7. As I mentioned earlier, they were 9-3 starting under Vogel. That means they're something like 10-28 in their other games. I mean, that's just not acceptable for a playoff team, especially. It seems like to me the only time they know how to win games is when they're on a current hot streak and have some confidence. And to me, that means there's a lack of leadership there.
Yeah, I agree. You could even in just the body language alone at the beginning of Vogel's tenure, you could see that the Pacers expected to win, even when they blew leads, which they blew a lot of leads under Frank Vogel in those games that they won. People forget that. We would often get up by 14, 15 points in the first half, and the other team would make a comeback. You could see at the end of the day, in the fourth quarter, the Pacers expected to win, and during that losing streak, it was the exact opposite. Once things started snowballing, the Pacers were never able to get it back under control.
Yeah, and that leads me to this next question that a lot of fans are talking about. In your opinion, can this season still be saved? If you were to give it a percentage, the percentage chance of the Pacers that have to make the playoffs, what would you say it is?
I'd say about 55%, and I obviously have a bias there being a Pacers fan. I do feel like at the end of the day they'll be able to hang on to that eighth and final playoff spot. There's only 16 games left. Indiana's tied for that eighth seed right now. It's very hard to take Charlotte seriously when the Bobcats trade their best player, their second leading scorer, for three role players and two draft picks. I mean, what's up with that? And your owner is Michael Jordan, you know, one of the most uber competitive maniacs to ever play. And MJ comes out publicly and says he doesn't even really want to make the playoffs. So I'm not buying. Charlotte was, you know, a number seven seed last April, but the team is just drastically different, so the Bobcats don't scare me. Milwaukee, I will buy, and I give them a 45% chance to make the playoffs. They are a threat to the Pacers. They only scored 56 points yesterday, but they ran the 76ers off the floor last week, a legitimate playoff team, one of the hottest teams in the NBA. So the Milwaukee Bucks, Scott Skiles knows how to take the team to the playoffs in the East. Andrew Bogut and Brandon Jennings are as healthy as they're going to be at this point. They have Corey Maggette back. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Milwaukee Bucks were able to get the eighth seed. But if you put a gun to my head, I would say the Indiana Pacers.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. But I remember an earlier game this season when the Pacers lost, basically blew a game to the Bucks at home, and I remember telling some people that this one's going to come back to bite us, and I really hope it doesn't. After this tough stretch of games where we're playing the Bostons and the Chicagos and the New Yorks of the world, the Pacers' schedule gets a lot more favorable to close out the season, and they do have another game against both Charlotte and Milwaukee. I think they're going to have to find a way to manage maybe a few wins in the tough stretch, get some confidence back, and then take care of business specifically at home. I think the season can still be saved, but I'm going to put the odds a little bit less than you. I hate to say it. I'm going to put it just under 50%. I really hope I'm wrong. I looked at both the Bucks and Bobcats schedules. They're pretty comparable to the Pacers, but like you said, with the experience in the playoffs, I give a slight edge to Milwaukee, but again, hope I'm wrong, and I hope we smear that deer.
For sure.
Last question, and this is something a lot of people are starting to talk about. When it comes to Danny Granger, now he didn't play against the Knicks, and the Pacers look better, so I knew there'd be some more comments about whether or not we should trade him or keep him or whatever. I wanted to ask you, Chris, should we trade Danny Granger, or what key moves should we make to be right on track for next season?
Well, no, Ty, I don't think it's in the team's best interest to trade Granger unless we're just blown away with an offer like Monte Ellis or Eric Gordon. I will admit, though, that moving Danny is a lot more plausible now than it was a year ago, but there are still a few problems with the concept. First is just receiving fair value and getting a package that can and help Indiana win right away. Because it's very rare that you see a star player, and Danny does still qualify as a star. You hardly ever see a star player dealt for another star. It's usually something like the Anthony or Williams trades. Utah and Denver gave up the stars. They got back quantity for quality. The Pacers don't need a quantity of players, because if we have anything covered, it's depth. What we need is quality, more talent. And Danny's value right now, coming off the year, his scoring and perimeter shooting dropped off, isn't going to bring us back the type of talent that would make the trade worthwhile. It's so funny. In hindsight, it looks like the front office goofed last season. Minnesota offered Al Jefferson for Granger straight up. The Pacers said no. That kind of possibility probably won't come up again. So just in addition to his talent and the reality that his value is at a four-year low, the best case for not trading Danny is this. He's our guy. We drafted him. He fell to us. We were very lucky. He became a star in Indiana. He signed a long-term contract as a Pacer. That contract is still very reasonable, just 3 years and $40 million remaining. Bird wants to build around him. Danny hasn't complained one iota. Danny wants to be here. He's extremely high character. He's not a hot shot. You never have to worry, Ty, about opening the Indianapolis Star and reading about Granger doing drugs in a nightclub. He's unselfish on the court. When you have a star who wants to be a Pacer, much like Reggie Miller or Jermaine O'Neal, that's something that's tough to replace, and it's special. It's something that you can't buy on the free agent market. You can't purchase loyalty.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I would only trade Granger if it's a real good deal that brings in a good veteran or two. And, you know, I don't want more young guys. I think we have enough of those to build around. I'm going to sound like a broken record on this when I say that I think too much is expected out of Granger. I just think he needs some help. I will admit that there are some nights when he doesn't look like he may be going as hard as he used to, and I'd much rather see that guy that dove on the floor and busted his teeth out every night. I know that's a difficult thing to say. It's easier said than done. But as I've also mentioned before, I love Psycho T, but I kind of want to see him, I kind of envision him as that six man that comes off the bench and wreaks havoc and still puts up big numbers. I would love to acquire a big man and another scoring guard while keeping Danny Granger around. I just think we need a few leaders. And I still believe that Collison and George have very bright futures. I'm not sold on Stevenson, or definitely not Rush, but I could see us making a trade in the offseason, maybe Rush and a first-round pick to maybe get us something. Hopefully we can land a free agent. I'm still confident in this team's future. How about you?
Well, I am, as long as we make the right decisions. The key is, you know, we're going to have a ton of cap space. My question would be, how do you spend it? Are you able to spend it? You know, Bird said he won't sign two maximum contract guys, which is great because there aren't max guys available in the summer of 2011 anyway. There are some decent players out there. Some of them don't fit. Glenn Davis, I think, duplicates Tyler Hansbrough. Nene Hilario doesn't work as long as the Pacers are committed to Hibbert. You know, J.R. Smith is out there. He's, you know, a career reserve in Denver. He'd probably jump at the chance to start somewhere else. The best option, I think, for the Pacers, and the one that would really give us most hope for the future, is David West. He's, you know, as you know, a power forward for the Hornets, and he can opt out of his contract at the end of the year. I would bet on him doing that. He'd only make $7.5 million next season if he didn't opt out. There's no sense of playing at that figure when you're as good as West. He's been underpaid his whole career, and if Indiana pays him, we all know the Hornets' financial situation, the Chris Paul situation. I don't see why West couldn't end up in Indiana, reunited with Darren Collison, and continue being very successful as a scorer. And that would give us another star to go with Granger. And at that point, I think we're a fifth or sixth seed in the playoffs with the development, like you said, of Collison and George and Hibbert. And, you know, we're looking at maybe one more really good player to where we compete for, you know, going deep in the Eastern Conference playoffs. So I think the future is still bright, but we have to make the right decisions with our cap space, make the right trades, and find the right coach.
Well said, sir. Well, let's hope that it's a very good and interesting off season. But until then, we still got some basketball to play, and let's hope that the next time we bring you on the show, we're talking about our playoff matchup. How's that sound?
That would be beautiful. First time in 5 years, and I think Pacers fans would love it.
It's been a long time coming. Well, Chris, it's been great having you on the show, and we'll talk to you next time.
Good to be back. See you later.
See you. Well, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. And as Harry Carey would always say, only the shadow knows. Take care.